Hi, and welcome to the September 13th, 2007 edition of the Big Monkey Podcast, recorded on-site at Big Monkey Comics, 1722B, 14th Street, Northwest, in Washington, D.C. Here, in a sparsely furnished basement apartment, located at the longitude and latitude of a heart in agony, five guys cry while trying to come up with the answers to those questions that have plagued us for years, like, oh, who the heck cares? We're too sad. This is the Big Monkey Podcast. I'm Ben Hatton, writer of Those Wednesdays, and I'll be your MC for the next hour of comic discussion and debate. We have a slightly different lineup tonight, as Scipio Garling is taking the night off.
Yeah.
We love it! No. But I'm still joined by four guys who know way more about comics than I do, so let's make some introductions. Starting to my right.
Hello, I'm Devon Sanders of Seven Hells.
I'm John Terry of Face Down in the Gutters.
My name is Mike Pellegrino, and I write Are You Feeling Big Mike?
I'm John Brooks of John Hex Lives.
For our first topic, we're going to talk about Marvel and Spider-Man's One More Day. Yeah. Following after a long line of events, The Other, Road to Civil War, Back in Black, One More Day is the self-proclaimed most controversial storyline ever. But I have to start off this conversation with, there's been so many changes in just a few years. Do you think Marvel has run out of stories to tell about poor Peter Parker? And we're going to start with John Carey.
How can you run out of stories to tell about Peter Parker? Peter Parker can't, like, walk to work without getting jumped by the Beetle. The Beetle's got some ridiculous plan that hinges on, like, kidnapping a school boss or something, and Spider-Man goes, oh, he's one of mine, I'll beat him up. There's your whole issue. How hard is it to come up with a story? Yeah, also worth noting, it's the same story that was in every other issue of Amazing for, like, 15 years. Yeah. Aunt May's sick. Oh crap, Dr. Octopus has the cure or something. Oh no, giant machinery is atop my back. However will I get out. The most controversial story ever is Aunt May pregnant with like a kid. Is he gonna pull the plug? Like, what's the deal? I'd read a comic. Yeah. Peter was, they're calling Maury or something. Peter Parker, you are the father. Oh, Chad. And Peter's all, I was 1,000% sure it wasn't mine.
Devon.
He just comes out and, like, smacks him in the mouth. That would be awesome.
Mine!
All right, Devon?
Are there more stories to be told?
Well, it's just like, they've, for almost 2.5 years now, mm-hmm. they've changed Peter Parker every 6 months. Well, first he's like, I'm a totem. Next it was, I'm gonna be donning some robotic armor. Right. Then it was like, now I'm gonna be pissed off at Iron Man. Then it was, I'm gonna be black and sad again. And like, and now it's, you know,
well,
my...
You know, honestly, I think this is their attempt to like, kind of unpaint themselves out of a corner because, you know, the problem with Spider-Man is that he's as old, if not older, than everybody at this table right now. And that's a problem. It's like you want to live vicariously through Spider-Man, but now the only thing that he does is like whine to his wife and bitch about how like his, like, you know, his Aunt May is going to die for like the 80th time. And it's like, you know, it's a little play. It's a little play.
Brooks?
I don't know. Straczynski, however you pronounce his name, is...
You got that one right.
Captain Britannia.
Anyway, it just seems like Straczynski just wants to make the most melodramatic comic book possible, and yeah. everyone else seems to like not go with his tone. Like when they write Spider-Man, he's like remarkably upbeat everywhere except Amazing Spider-Man, which is weird because you expect Amazing Spider-Man to be the, you know, where you get his story, like his main story, as opposed to, you know, side stuff. Well, Peter David is writing Spider-Man better than Straczynski did, or does. And hopefully this this last, whatever One More Day will be, is in that whole melodramatic run that been going on so they can have him fight Beetle for whatever reason.
Big Mike?
Well, I mean, for starters, I mean, if history is any indicator, Aunt May is a very resilient woman. I think she's got what it takes to make it out of this one alive. But, I mean, I think the way Marvel is marketing this thing is that somebody's going to bite the dust. I mean, I think that's kind of the writing on the wall, is that somebody's going to somebody's going to go down from this one. But the annoying part to me is that the best Spider-Man stories are not being written in the flagship title. They're not being written in Amazing Spider-Man. I mean, I am like the biggest proponent of Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane, you know, this side of the Mississippi.
Yeah, he is.
And yeah, I realize, you know, all right, I'm a skirt, but whatever. I mean, the whole point is that the quintessence of Spider-Man is this sort of like young character, like coming to terms with, you know, coming of age as a superhero. And yet, we're not able to see that anymore because he's like in his mid-30s, and he's kind of, you know, he's married, and Aunt May is pretty much ready to die anyway. So, I mean, if this stuff ends up like $1 million baby, I won't be surprised. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's just I'm just not that interested in it anymore because it's not something I can identify with, and that's what made Spider-Man so awesome to begin with. Was when you're a teenager, you want to be Peter Parker.
I know exactly what he's saying. Like, my love affair with Spider-Man kind of ended, with bad writing, but it also ended when, like, I kind of realized that I was older than Spider-Man, and it was just like, and it's not going to get any better for him, but hey, I might be able to make it better for myself.
Yeah, but Devon, you're older than Jay Garrick at this point, right?
Yeah.
Wow, somebody called the burn unit. Open up the bed in the burn unit, this man needs to skin
crack. I'm sorry, I'm feisty.
This is the last time you fill in. We need some skins back. We need a little more monocle polish.
I gotta make it count. My mom's listening.
But I'm used to terrific, beautiful.
Yeah. All right. But, so you said something about him being married, Mike. Quesada seems to blame the lack of interesting stories in Spider-Man on Mary Jane. And, like, has been saying it for, like, 5 years now.
That's
and like
blaming the victim, that's what that is.
What do you mean, Devon?
No, I mean, like, Mary... I don't think Spider-Man got bad when he married Mary Jane. It was just, like, writers just got progressively worse writing Spider-Man. They forgot how to write fun into it. And, you know, it's like, I've never been married, but it's like, you know, it's like, their marriage doesn't seem like a lot of fun. They should have been divorced, like, you know, like a second after, like, you know, the issue after they got married, you know?
And his third murder.
Amazing Spider-Man.
After Norman Osborn stole their baby, but convinced her that it was a miscarriage, which they wrote out of continuity, if you look at...
Yeah, after Aunt May died, but it was an actress that...
But if you're gonna try to move a character forward like that, if you're gonna try to take a character to the next step in his life, don't you have to really do it? I mean, right now, doesn't it feel like Peter Parker is a 16-year-old boy in a 35-year-old man's body, and that's why it's not really working? Is that he's in this situation with Aunt May where she's lying on her deathbed, and he's behaving like a petulant child,
right?
Rather when than he behaving,
talks,
yeah.
When he talks to that doctor, and he's like, maybe in the circles you roll in, but I know a lot of people who can, like, cure a bullet wound.
Yeah.
Which makes you wonder why he didn't go to them in the first place, but you know.
Because he's a genius. He invented little radios that communicate with his brain directly. Mother of God, I know 7 dudes that can travel time. Like, your average Marvel Team-Up. Like, how often did he roll through Dr. Doom's time machine in Marvel Team-Up? Good God, man. This would be like 4 pages in a Jerry Conway story. And Conway wasn't that good. Incidentally, Conway wouldn't have written an opening to an issue that sounds like the spoken word part at the beginning of a Meatloaf track. Like, the first page of the book would have ended on, would you offer your throat to the wolf in the pale moonlight?
Yes!
And then, yes! I bet you say that to all the boys. Bam! Next page is Amazing
Spider-Man. And a guitar riff. Yeah, wicked guitar.
But even post House of M, there's like 40 people at the Xavier School for the Gifted that could save Aunt May's life. And why doesn't Spider-Man just roll up there and be like, I'm the GD Spider-Man, help me out, you know? But he doesn't, you know?
Like 9 times. God.
Instead, he behaves like a 9-year-old boy and runs around all emo, which is the real problem with Spider-Man from the beginning, is that, like, if you want to make him an emo teenager, that's fine, but then put it in Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane where he's actually an emo teenager.
Right.
Don't make it about, like, a 32-year-old man that's, like, trying to, like, grind out a living.
But maybe that's why Quesada needs a divorce, because he's like, what's the only way to really age this character? Well, make him break up again.
But here's the problem with that. It's like, if they get the divorce, then you're going to have, like, 800 issues where he's moping over, like, having to get rid of, like, his, like, wife.
Yeah, or he's going to be swinging around going, like, I don't have enough money to take Betty out.
I can't afford webbing because I'm up to my
Oh, I'm up to my shoulders in alimony. I can't afford that fluid anymore.
Hey, them supermodels is expensive.
So I think all that's going to happen is if they give her to Mary Jane, it goes back to Spider-Man status quo where he was 16, except we've established that he's like 32 now. So he's going to be swinging around going like, man, I hope they show Twin Peaks tonight. He's going to be written directly to man-children across the board.
I'm going to fight crime and go home and drink some Ovaltine.
Yeah.
All right, so... I'm going to say that I thought the first issue of One More Day was kind of a dud. Okay, pretty much a dud.
You're a pretty nice guy.
I'm a pretty nice guy. But I think if it hadn't been for Marvel's advertising, if there hadn't been the "this is the most controversial storyline ever," I might have gone into One More Day with a little more openness.
Are you new to Marvel? The first Avengers story starts with, like, Mother of God, do you see what we've drawn here? It's all the characters you might have seen in Tales of Suspense. In one place! It's the greatest thing ever. Call your mother. Every issue since has had the same blur. This is nothing new. Marvel's been a hype machine longer than the Bush administration. I mean, it's ridiculous.
But one would think that at this point, like, and DC does it too, Final Crisis, one would think that at this point one of the companies would go, you know what? When we really talk a lot of game, like, and we don't pay off, we're in trouble, because no one will get angrier than a nerd who has high expectations.
but the thing is that nerd with high expectations shells out the money. I mean, the bad comics sell 80,000, 90,000, 100,000 issues. I mean,
he's talking about Justice League of America, so you know.
Well, I'm also talking about Civil War. I mean, that wasn't any good either, and they hyped the hell out of that thing, and it sold like hotcakes.
It was pretty. All I can think of is when going through One More Day was... This is not more controversial than Kevin Smith adding in the fact that Black Canary had been a Black Cat had been sexually assaulted and then like incestuous like man rape in another in another backstory.
Yeah, that
and
was
I'm like,
pretty bad.
I mean, and all he's like is, my aunt is dying. That's not controversial. That is everyday life.
No, that's Spider-Man's everyday.
Right.
My aunt is dying, or my aunt is marrying the Vulture.
They really did name this thing properly. It's like One More Day. It's just melodrama.
Yeah, they should call
another
it One More
Day.
One More Bad Straczynski plot arc. I mean, this has been going on for 6 years.
I thought this was going to be a one-shot. this is going to happen.
Right. One More Day shouldn't last one more month.
Dude, it's going to last six more months. That's what's pathetic.
So
that's a long day.
You know, I just... You know what would make this so right? I just want Spider-Man just to fight the... What were they? Not the Marauders. The Enforcers.
Yeah. They fight Daredevil.
Yeah, bring back the guy with the lasso, and it's
Fancy
just like...
Dan.
Fancy Dan. That's going to make things all right.
Oh, man. I need a character named Knuckles.
All right.
Fancy Dan and the Ox.
I think we've griped about poor Peter Parker enough. For our closing question, I gotta ask, what exactly plays on a radio station that is tuned to the frequency of despair? Ooh. And we're gonna start with Devon.
Anything that... Have you ever heard of that album that, Spider-Man sang? Where it's like, you know, it hurts to be Spider-Man. that's what it sounds like.
Carrie?
Morrissey. Oh, Morrissey.
Big Mike?
The radio station of despair? I don't know, the soundtrack to my life. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding around. No, I think it's definitely the you know, just whatever Peter Parker has on his iPod at any given moment.
Brooks.
The Johnny Cash of later years.
Wow.
And maybe that's what's that song you say he's just a friend?
That's a good tune.
Yeah. But that would be on the set frequency of despair. Oh.
Can I take my answer back?
Yeah.
Jeff Buckley.
Indeed. Yeah. Any sad cowboy song. That one's just for you, Nate. And thanks, guys. And now it's time for a dramatic reading by our regular contributor, Nate Soloway.
Go, Nate.
One day, in Metropolis Prison, as the world's most dangerous outlaw, Luthor, speaks to the warden.
Warden, I'd like to do something helpful. Like repairing the other convicts' broken radios.
Splendid!
Afterward, as Luthor uses his scientific genius to tamper with the radio parts.
Ha ha! I steal one part here, another part there, and before long I'll spring one of the most sensational prison breaks of all time. If
my theory holds.
Then, one evening, the criminal scientist completes a fantastic device in his cell, built from the various parts.
Incredibly, my invention can broadcast my voice through the time barrier into the far distant future. Years ago, Superboy, now grown into Superman, was saved from being destroyed by me, by a member of the Legion of Superheroes from a future era. I've long believed that if a Legion of Superheroes exists in the future, then a Legion of Supervillains probably exists in the future too. If the heroes could save Superboy, the villains could save me.
For many hours, Luthor whispers over and over into the Fantastic Device's microphone.
Calling the future, arch-criminal Luthor from the year 1961, calling the Legion of Supervillains in the future. Am imprisoned. Need help. Save me.
Suddenly, at dawn,
three objects are materializing on the floor. They weren't there a moment ago. Has my appeal been answered?
We heard your summons. Use these objects to escape, Luthor. We'll join you in your own time.
This has been a dramatic reading from Superman number 147, August 1961. It's also why you don't let Lex Luthor near freaking radios.
For our second topic, we're jumping over to DC. A couple weeks ago, I was reading an interview with Dan DiDio, and he said, "My background comes from animation and from soap operas. Soaps are produced day in, day out, Monday through Fridays. They don't repeat, they don't take breaks." Now, DiDio was talking about the pace with which DC has kept going for the last 5 years. But with Amnesia, Possibly Broken Weddings, Resurrection, and Death After Finding Love becoming more and more common storylines, is DC also becoming thematically like a soap opera? And we're going to start with John Brooks.
DC has gone on its pace as though you must keep going towards something like Final Crisis. Everything needs to build up to one spectacular event, and everything must link for some reason. And I'm guessing they figured that they need a whole bunch of weird storylines to kind of like tie everyone together. So you need Bart Allen to die and Wally to go on some kind of revenge trip where he punches Pied Piper in the back repeatedly at super speed. That was just wrong.
Like a shiatsu.
Wait. Happy ending.
Wally would do it too because he's a friend. But anyway.
a super friend.
It seems like it's too much. Like, if it doesn't stop, everything just becomes pointless. Like, you know it's going to be this big overdone thing all the time. Like, year after year. And it's, no one wants that. Not really. I mean, it's, when it's special, it's special. When it's not.
Right. Mike?
Well, I actually think that, yeah, they have taken a page out of the book of soap operas a little bit, but I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I mean, we have Final Crisis. We had Infinite Crisis. We have all these kind of things looming on the horizon, but it feels like a moving target to a certain extent, that you're always building towards that next thing. And soap operas do that, but ultimately what becomes important and what keeps you tuning in every day, and I've watched a certain amount of soap operas in my life, so, you know, make fun of me now, but at the end of the day, what keeps you tuning in, and this is what has been really good about DC in the DiDio era, is that what drives the plot forward is the relationships between characters, and that there's really been an emphasis in DC on the relationships between characters and how that drives development and how that drives the plot forward, and that, you know, you can go through this huge Infinite Crisis thing, and at the end, the kind of denouement is just Wonder Woman, Superman, and Batman hanging around talking to each other and saying what they're going to do for the next year, and that is somehow compelling, and you know, I think they have taken a page out of the book of soap operas, but I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing, and I think that that's good, and I think it makes us, I think it appeals to the more mature audience that's reading comics nowadays.
Gary?
Denouement? In America, we pronounce it denouement. Anyway, cheaply manufactured drama in a comic book, huh? Wow. Is that new? Like, Aqua Baby dying is a soap opera plot. Like, I feel like a lot of the stuff that is typical of a soap opera has been typical of comic books since Marvel started, really. Since the Marvel age, if you will. So, I don't see it as anything new, even, really. characters die, characters get ridiculous amnesia and beat up their friends all the time, characters are replaced by different people playing the characters, it's all soap opera stuff. I'd prefer if it was closer to professional wrestling.
Devon?
You know, I don't even know if it's so much soap opera as, like, you know, Dan DiDio, like, sort of taking us all by the hand and leading us through the jungle and singing Circle of Life. Because that's the way it really does feel. It's like, right now, it's just, you know, everything has repercussions all over the place. And it's just, honestly, I'm a little tired. I don't need to know that if, like, you know, the all-new Adam takes a squat in, like, wherever he is right now in the Wildstorm universe, it's going to have repercussions, like, on Kyle Rayner, you know? And that's just pretty much what's going on right now. I'm a little tired of it. And, you know, that's kind of like, you know, the soap opera aspect of it. You know, how, like, if Victor Newman does something, then, like, one of the ex-Newman wives, you know, it's like it can be felt by, like, you know, the Jabot Empire. Don't ask me how I know that.
I think we should just admit that a lot of us have watched some soap operas.
I watched my story.
Dude, on Days of Our Lives when Marlena was possessed by Satan.
I don't watch
that. Dude, that clicked me. Like, that grabbed me so much when I was young.
Days was my jam in college.
Yeah, dude.
No. Valentine's Day lasted 2 months. Right. It was aces. Let me tell you.
Yeah, but I, John, you joked around about talking about professional wrestling, but I think that professional wrestling... It's
a man soap opera.
Right.
I mean, like,
no, it is. Yeah. But I think that one of the failings of comics in trying to emulate this sort of soap opera professional wrestling model is that with those characters and professional wrestling and soap operas and in other forms of narrative, you can have so much more flexibility when it comes to moral ambiguity. But in comics, you have a hard time, like, you want your heroes and your villains, you know what I mean?
Wait, like, moral ambiguity, like, oh, I just hit you with a hammer on the thumb,
but
and, like, now you're
a bad. No, I mean, for example, in professional wrestling and in soap operas, you have characters that are good 1 week and bad the next, and the audience just buys it. But in comics, you know, there are certain people at this table, I don't really want to name names, but who might have a hard time believing that Green Arrow could be redeemed, you know what I mean? And so they have a hard time of watching a character break out of a paradigm through the sort of interpersonal development, emulating the kind of soap opera model.
Excuse me, paradigm.
Dude, we're gonna give you skips. Like, where's his monocle and smoking jacket?
I was gonna say, ladies and gentlemen, these drinks can be.
Y'all better paradig this.
Except he likes that Kirby.
So, no.
I love him.
Me too. And actually, I'm gonna play the devil's advocate. No, because that's my thing. But, like, and I'm going to be the voice of Skip here, because he and I were talking about it right beforehand. He would say that the foundation of the soap operization of comics is not in the early Golden Age stuff, and that it is a bad thing that it has developed over since the 1970s. Because originally...
The Golden Age stuff was aimed at, like, seven-year-olds. And it was ridiculous then. That's why it was condemned by everyone in positions of moral authority.
Yeah, if Congress investigates you, chances are you weren't, like, a good influence.
If people are willing to believe that something is, like, the foundation of juvenile delinquencism... If that's even a freaking word, I doubt it.
You know,
I probably made it up.
Delinquency.
Yeah. There you are. I'm an art major. Anyway, if they're willing to believe it, there might be something suspect about the product. Like Golden Age books are. Some of them are great. Some of them suck. Some of them really, really suck. But I don't think it's anything to be basing characterization on now or storylines on now or writing styles on now. It's 60 years gone, 70 years gone.
I mean, I get how a lot of really traditional comic book fans think that it's a little bit cheap to use things like marriage and death and losing your virginity as ways to... I mean, I say that as, you know, I'm actually being serious, but, like, you know, losing your virginity and stuff like that is ways to kind of age a character forward. And, you know, you think of, like, you know, Connor Kent dropping his V-card and then he's dead, like, a month later. You know, I mean, now you think about it. I mean, in our time, like a month later. But, you know, I can see how, like, a lot of traditional comic fans would think of that as a bit of a cheap plot mechanism. But for those of us that were raised on TV and have watched, you know, dramas our whole lives and were raised on Saved by the Bell and 90210, that stuff doesn't seem ridiculous. That stuff just seems normal. That's the narrative.
That's serial storytelling now is like... something really bad happens. You have a baby. It ages. It then gets erased from continuity after saving Angel. The world from Parallax.
And then a Kryptonian from an alternate dimension knocks your friend's head off.
Yeah.
And then I think the whole Connor losing his virginity was just like Johns was like, I'm going to give him one last shebang before I have to kill him off.
I think it was more that they didn't know what was going to happen to him at the end of Infinite Crisis.
Yeah.
I think they were going to whack Nightwing.
Yeah, they called an audible. Yeah,
they called an audible.
They called an audible an artist.
So no one has problems with the fact that it's gone this way. That, I mean, do you see it as a step away for us, or a step removing comics from their original intention, or do we not even need to pay attention to the original intention of comics anymore?
I don't think we need to pay attention to Skip or the original intention. No, like, in all seriousness, it's like, if someone would have told me Crisis on Infinite Earths would make me a huge DC Comics fan, as convoluted as it was, I would, you know, now, sitting here in front of you like 20-some years later, I would just go, no. But you know what? There might be some kid who's sitting around reading all this Countdown 52, House of M, Civil nonsense, and going, wow, it's one big circle of life, and actually enjoying it. So you know what? To that kid, I salute you, and I say, come shop at Big
That's cool.
What if they picked up one more day? Would they then be like,
oh,
I love
you? Apologize to them.
Yeah,
well,
what if they picked up any issue of Spider-Man from 1968?
Yeah.
I mean,
their radios will be turned to the dial of despair.
Already worn.
Yeah. But I mean, I sort of think that it's like anything else, that when you have, you know, when you have a certain model for moving a plot forward, people are either going to buy into it or they're not. But at the end of the day, this isn't how they did it 50 years ago, but it's how they're doing it now. And, you know, like Devon said, kids today are going to read it. Kids today are going to look back and they're going to be like, wow, I remember when Stephanie Brown was Robin, and that was really sad. Or I remember, you know.
She was horrible.
You know, or God, I remember what happened to Tim Drake's father. And the thing is, like, they're not going to judge it on what the trend was. They're going to judge it on whether or not it was good or bad writing. They're going to be like, I don't like the Justice League sitting around a table for six issues, but, you know, doggone
it. But that's soap opera right there. In soap opera, one person can have a conversation for a week.
Yeah, but you know what else is soap opera is Damage punking Zoom in JSA. I mean, that's like him calling back something that happened a while ago and like getting in touch with this like inner demon that he has to face down and punking Zoom, but like also at the same time like coming to terms with being part of this team. That's also soap opera, but it's darn good comics.
You know what else is soap opera? Orangutans having dreams about marrying people. That was impassioned. And that's straight DC nonsense.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it comes full circle.
That's also like Tuesday night at my house.
Did Golden Age comics have any directive, really? Or they were just stories?
No, it was just some stories.
Yeah. I hope I don't blow myself up.
Yeah, bad guy does something, hero uses his particular gimmick to foil it.
Like, it's just like a natural...
Captain America spanks Hitler.
Yeah.
Like,
I know.
Which I think was a cover, actually.
No,
I think he was punching him in the face, but whatever goes on in your fantasies is fine.
Hooray!
I got a weird Hitler fetish. I love Jaffers.
Yeah. I love
so does Skip, apparently.
Give me tall boots and a small mustache.
Jesus.
Oh,
El Gaucho. It's getting punchy in here.
Really?
Too much soda. We all had it. Anyway. So, final thoughts on the topic. Starting with Devon.
Final thoughts on the topic. It's all good. It really is. I mean, people are still reading these damn things.
Yeah.
I wish I could like say something like, you know, profound, but despite DC's best efforts or anyone's best efforts or to their best efforts, people are still walking through the door, so hey, it's all good.
Fair enough. Gary?
I feel like Didio saying that he's going to introduce soap opera pacing is like saying he's going to print comics on paper and staple them together. It's been that way my entire life. I'll live with it.
Enough. Mike?
I mean, like Devon said, I'm still buying them. I still like them. I'm not going to stop buying them. If tomorrow they stop being like soap operas, I'm still going to buy them. So, but it makes it fun.
Fair enough. John?
I have no like real problem with soap opera themes, I guess. I don't actually watch soap operas, so I know how I did what y'all were talking about.
Dude, Luke and Laura are the mom.
You don't protest too much, bro.
I just did it just once. But anyway, I just hope that it's not always just going to be everything has to lead up to some event all the time. That's the only thing I have a problem with.
Superman gets trapped on an island after getting caught in a storm, and then, you know, everyone thinks he's dead.
And Clark.
And that was Green Arrow, wasn't it?
That's his origin.
Yeah, I mean, my only concern about it is I don't want to get to a point in a storyline where I go, oh, it's just sweeps month, and and they're about to have a baby, but you know it's going to get kidnapped and raised by the evil Duke or whatever.
Dude, so you mean or the end of every
Duke of
Oil takes
you know, like,
baby.
I mean, that's my...
Sweeps is like late May through August. Exactly.
I want to get to a point where I'm like, man, this storyline could end, have an ending, and then we could move from there to a new step, as opposed to being like... You know Luke and Laura are just going to get broken up again, but not even going to happen. You know Green Arrow's not going to get married. He's going to wind up in a bed. That's going to be my thing. Dan DiDio is not going to let Green Arrow and Black Canary get married. He's going to cripple someone. And then they're going to have amnesia and have an evil twin.
And a bad son.
Have his plane blow up over the Amazon or something.
Have him get atomized. Yeah.
Exactly.
Get his DNA off Superman's costume.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert if you haven't
seen
it.
Yeah.
You haven't read your comics from 7 years ago.
All right, and on that note, it's time for another dramatic reading.
Give your orders and ultimatums to those who choose to obey, or are too cowardly to fight, not to me. Or learn again the difference between a god of thunder and a mortal man in a metal suit. As for your masters, since power is all they understand, tell them that Thor says this. If any mortal comes uninvited to Asgard on behalf of those who suppose themselves to be powers, within the hour, they will learn what true power is.
And that, my friends, was from Thor number 3.
For our third and final topic, we're going to talk about comics in the 1990s. The decade saw some of the largest growth in the comic industry, spawning companies like Image and Vertigo, and huge events like Onslaught and Heroes Reborn. It also saw that bubble pop. So I want to ask you guys, what do you think really sums up comics in the 90s? And we're gonna start with Mike P, because he's got his hands up.
Gritty teeth and small feet. That's what sums up comics in the 90s. It was an era that was very interesting, but at the end of the day, it was all style and no substance.
Amen.
If you put beautiful art on a cover, slapped number one up in the corner, people were going to come out of the woodwork and buy it, even if it was the biggest piece of doo-doo that had ever walked off the shelf. I mean, that was just how the 1990s got down. And, you know, we killed Superman. We had Image. And, you know, there were lots of good ideas that came out in the 90s, but they couldn't sustain any of them.
Right, like Batman in a wheelchair or whatever.
Oh,
you know, like,
Batman in the Joe Quesada armor. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Darkhawk, remember Darkhawk? A great, great comic for like 10 issues. After that, it turned into poop. It was unbelievable.
Nomad lasted 25 issues.
Yeah,
and then ended with him wrapped in an American flag shooting a chain gun. Like.
Yeah. although there was the greatest miniseries in the history of Marvel Comics, which was Skrull Kill Crew that came out of 99.
Yeah, that wasn't a miniseries. I think it just got canceled. That one sort of wrote itself into a corner.
You say potato, I say potato, Carrie.
Carrie, what about you? What says 90s to you?
I mean, shoulder pads bigger than B. Arthur. Ben and I, we both watch Golden Girls on a podcast.
Yeah.
I know what we're talking about.
Thank you for being fair.
I don't know. I was a youngin. I was born in 83. I'm but a little guy. Yeah, I know.
Wow.
I'm a young
guy. You're a zygote.
I know. I'm but a single cell, a twinkle in my father's eye to this day. I may have learned to read from a beat-up copy of The Dark Knight Returns. Honest to God. That's why I hate transvestite Nazis. No figure. And Klaus Janson's inking. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, give me my midget
literary
job. Anyway, the 90s, I reread Reign of the Superman recently, and it wasn't that bad. I fully expected it to be like a full-on kick-me-in-the-balls kind of quality, and it was more like a lot of Guy Gardner being a jerk, and I was used to that by now, but... I remember it being really crappy, and I don't know why I kept reading it. But every time I had $1.25, I'd buy like Spectacular Spider-Man and see J.M. DeMatteis write another story about vermin being molested, and I'd still keep reading. Man, saying this aloud is kind of therapeutic. My name is John, and I bought a lot of crap.
Devon, what about you in the 90s?
Oh, God. X-Force. Yeah, X-Force just is everything that the 90s were. I mean, it was just like, it was really bad art, really just bad writing that just did nothing but service, like, you know, the bad art, like, you know, like a hooker, basically. And just, it was just terrible. It was just the 90s for, like, if you were an X-Men fan, it was just the worst time ever. And the worst thing about it is like, you didn't even know it. Because it was just like Wolverine was just coming up to you with candy constantly.
I'm
like,
fighting a robot.
I know.
Wait,
it's
who's
like,
also
I'm
a Russian.
A robot. And it's like, you know, and it's like, look, I've got like a robot sidekick named LCD. And it's just like, wow. Now it's just like, I look at these things and I go, who was it? Adam Kubert?
Yeah.
Adam Kubert. The art was beautiful, but the story is just, wow. Really bad.
Brooks, what is the 90s?
I don't know how good working a Rob Liefeld reference here. loud. Yeah. Everything was just kind of like big and gaudy and not really having a purpose except to take your money. And I'm like, here, look at this. It's, you know.
I'm going to spend money on hard case.
So they spend more money on artists than writers.
Exactly. I mean, the 90s. Almost every cover I, like, remember for some reason was just someone who shouldn't have had a gun shooting it on the cover. And, like, you know, like, the be-all, end-all was, like, you know, the culmination of the 90s to me was, like, Stephen Platt. Where it was, like, the man could draw shell casings like nobody's damn business.
And create like, muscles.
Yeah, exactly. And you would sit there and you would just go, he can draw because look at all these shell casings. That's detail.
I do remember one of my like favorite moments of reading 90s comics was Trencher by Giffen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's a bit where Trencher fights Shadowhawk.
Wow.
And it's a panel where he, you know, Trencher's unloading with a machine gun, and Giffen put in every single point of impact on Shadowhawk, and I was like, that is amazing. He must have done 100 points of impact. Oh my god, I'm gonna count them. And I was like, so excited. Like, but yeah, like,
meaningless detail. And a 90.
And everyone got their knees blown off.
Yeah.
Like, that was the big thing in the 90s. Everyone went for a knee shot. It's
oh,
like,
God.
They saw Terminator 2, and they're like, that is a sweet way to incapacitate somebody.
You know, everything.
No, it did. And if you read Image Comics, there was more dismemberment than you could shake a stick at. I mean, I remember, like, I bought this comic called Darker Image that was like a preview of all these new titles that weren't going to come out on time. They were going to be drawn by Jim Lee and Rob Liefeld, and there were all these new like titles from Image, and one of them was Blood Wolf. Like, knocking some dude. He was literally blowing the head off a guy whose name was Seymour Butts, and I thought that was the coolest damn thing I'd ever seen in my entire life. And I still have that comic at home, which makes me disturbed.
I have that, too.
But you were also 12 too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was 12, and that appealed to me. But nowadays. You know,
it's still a built
I
girl.
Just got that. But you have to be fair. You have to be fair that the 90s gave us some good stories. The 90s gave us Hellboy.
They did.
The 90s gave us Hellboy.
Yeah. The 90s gave us Vertigo.
Yeah.
And,
Joe Madureira, Humberto Ramos, both came out of the 90s. I love those guys.
And Michael Ringo.
Yeah.
You know? So there were some good things that came out of the 90s. It's not a total
Starman wash.
Starman's
like the anti-90s book that came out in the
90s. You know what?
It was a look back.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? Then that was the great thing about that book, because Starman was like this thing that like gave us like, you know, sort of like guideposts to the DC universe. Yeah. Because before that, it was just like everything was like Gunfire and Hitman and you know, Firebrand and just really bad series. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere comes Starman, and they start like creating this basically this sort of lexicon. Where it's like, because remember, there was no such thing as a legacy character before Starman. Where it was like, oh, wait a minute, now we have to tie in all the Starmen and all this other stuff. And then
Union Jack.
Like, right, and you know, well, yeah, Union Jack, but I guess I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway.
Denied.
No. But in all honesty, it was like, you know, you started seeing history within this comic. And so, yeah, if you have to, like, point at something good from the 90s, yeah, Starman would be it.
Devon, were you calling Hitman a bad series?
No, I'm not. Hitman, I'm just saying, but it was just a feel.
I was gonna say, because Zombie Night at the Gotham Aquarium,
yeah,
you can't hate on that.
No,
you can't.
The 90s gave us mainstream Grant Morrison.
I want to ask, Devon, as a retailer, what did you learn from the
1990s? That a lot of comics are nonsense, in all honesty. No, it's just like, no, you just can't put books up on a shelf and go, all right, come and get your gold foil covers. And that's kind of like what's going on right now with, like, you know, with comics, you know, where it's like, Marvel gave me, like, they sent me some stupid email the other day where it was like, if you order 100 copies of Anita Blake number one, Guilty Pleasures, you can get a 1 in 100, like, cover. And it was like, what the hell is this, 1994? Hell no.
Yeah. Dude, I have a Night Thrasher, issue number one at my house, where he's coming out of a broken hologram on his rocket skateboard. It's beautiful.
Good luck getting cover price for it.
What about Marvel and black dudes on rocket skateboards?
That's what the 90s gave us.
But I mean, DeMar, to what you were saying, I think one of the lessons of the 90s is that you can put that garbage on a cover, and you will sell a lot of copies of your number one. The problem is that number two through whatever are not going to sell anything.
Exactly.
And that if they're learning anything now, hopefully it's that you take a storyline and you actually sustain it to sell a book.
Exactly. I'll give a good example of what the 90s kind of taught, I think taught fans, as an example between my twin brother who collected comics in the 90s and myself who collect comics now. In 3 years, my twin brother, between like the ages of 13 and 16, accumulated 11 long boxes worth of comics. Wow. I, since really only getting back into comics since 2000, have accumulated 9 long boxes in 7 years. And that's because when I was looking through his collection, he has 8 copies of Ash, Smoke and Cinders, number one, because there are 8 different copies, or 8 different covers. And then he had to get 2 of each. So one could be stored for, you know, money day, and like money one could be stored for like reading and crapping up, because that's what the 90s taught us, that someday there's going to be money day where everyone can cash in their death of Superman. I tell people that I work at a comic book store, and they might be like, they've never looked at another comic in their life, and they go, I got a copy of Death of Superman in the bag. Do you think that's worth a lot? And I'm like, no.
I got to make the payments. I'm on a rocket ship.
Why don't you pay me to take that off your hands?
I actually had someone come up to me when I was reading, like, some random issue of a comic and was like, is that a collector's item? I'm like, no.
It's a place in the Danbury Mint.
I know, seriously.
I'm going to bag it. I'm going to put it away. I may never see it again, but I'm not fitting to sell it sometime later.
Like, I'm a collector and this is an item. There you go.
But that's, I mean, that's what it comes down to, ultimately, is that for those of us that really love it, it isn't about the collecting. These aren't baseball cards. These aren't whatever. It's about storytelling.
Right. But the 90s was about collecting.
Yes.
Devon and I get people all the time who are like, I have a comic where Spider-Man fights Michael Jackson.
Yeah!
How much is that worth?
This dude came in off the street, and he was like, and he's like poking around, looking at our shirts, and he's like, he just stopped and he goes, I have a comic where Spider-Man fights Michael Jackson, and Michael Jackson throws a knife at him, and Spider-Man catches it and throws it back, but then Michael Jackson catches it again.
Dude, Ben, don't you understand? That's how One More Day ends.
Oh my God. That's a spoiler. It's a rematch. Yeah.
All right.
Spoiler alert.
I want to end this topic with huge company-wide crossovers still pretty prevalent. Yeah. Tons of small presses kind of just coming out of the woodwork. And the feeling that there are more books on the shelves now than more than ever. Are we headed towards another late 90s bust? Or are we smarter this time around? And I want to talk to Devon. I want to ask Devon.
We're smarter this time around. There's a really great blog called Progressive Ruin by Mike Sterling, who used to be a retailer during the 90s. And occasionally they ask him questions about, would you do things the way that you did in the 90s? And the overall answer is no, because you just can't do it. If you do that, that way lies madness. There's no way. I mean, we're living, honestly, we're living in times where it's a hard sell to sell 100 copies of X-Men sometimes, because honestly the quality of the books has gone down, and you know, production costs have gone up, so the comics have actually gone up. So the wanting to go out there and get two or three copies to get you know, one to bag, one to board, you know, one to bag, one to board, one to like read, one to put in the bathroom, it just doesn't exist anymore. So yeah, it's like, if you do it that way, you're not going to have a comic book shop. So yeah, we definitely have learned something.
And on that note, I think it's time for a dramatic reading and a word from our sponsor.
The ghost of the general that haunted my M3 Stuart tank seemed to come from the flickering flashes of artillery fire at the front. Hi, General!
Greetings, Jim!
Any off-the-record battle info for me, General?
Keep your eyes open for a rock that's gonna turn steel into ashes.
One thing about the famous cavalry general who haunted the M3 tank and the TC who bore his name, me, Lieutenant Jeb Stuart. Cat in the woods almost scratched us. Start that smoke pot going, Rick.
That there was from G.I. Combat Number 8, written by old Bob Kaniger.
Big Monkey Comics has two fantastic stores, one located in Fredericksburg, Virginia, and the other in Washington, D.C., which is where this podcast is recorded. If you have any interest in the comics you heard mentioned on today's show, simply swing on by and grab them. Yet, Big Monkey Comics is so much more than a simple store. Join us for the Starro Attacks HeroClix event, starting this Saturday, September 22nd at 1 p.m. and running through October 20th. Come join the dozen already registered players in weekly tournaments of the comic-inspired tabletop strategy game. Also, on October 3rd, we'll be hosting a night of fine chocolate tasting from Biagio from 6 to 8 p.m. Also, this year, Halloween falls on a Wednesday, so come by the shop October 31st for the Big Monkey Comics costume party. More information on that will follow. Finally, don't forget our regular events like the Women's Comic Discussion Group, soon to be featured in the Washington Post magazine. This meets the first and third Wednesdays of every month at 1722B 14th Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C. And if you can't make it to our physical location, check out Big Monkey Online at www.bigmonkeycomics.com for news, reviews, merchandise, and Big Monkey Radio. Big Monkey, where comics are more fun than ever. Now it's time for recommendations, where the panelists get the chance to point out comics from the last 2 weeks that are worthy of note. And we're going to start with Carrie, because I don't think we've started with you this time around.
Hooray! Number one in all your hearts, too. All right. Daredevil 100. A really good anniversary issue. Well worth whatever the cover price was, if just for the two backup stories that are faintly ridiculous. Reprints of old Daredevil books. But a lot of great artists on it. Michael Lark, as ever, turns in some great stuff. But John Romita pages, and that's worth its weight in gold, as ever. So, Daredevil 100.
Mike?
Mine's going to be Booster Gold. When the first issue came out, I said that this could potentially be my favorite series if it keeps it up. And after issue two, I wasn't disappointed. You know, you have Booster facing down Sinestro in, like, a really, really interesting way and kind of using his unique Booster charms to get himself out of a situation. It's a great, like, great play on a character whose best friends ever have been a geek and a robot, and I just...
That sounds like my friends!
Booster. I love Booster.
But they're imaginary.
I'm your friend, Ben.
Hooray!
As an imaginary geek friend.
Yeah. I'll be the geek, Carrie will be the robot.
Brooks?
I'm recommending Thor. It has an awesome confrontation with Iron Man, and it's just really setting up to bring a new dynamic to Thor's mythos or whatever. I just want to point out that Michael sits a lot like Skip, but it's weird.
You may proceed.
That's not a monkey.
He's a Romara.
I have absolutely nothing to say.
Von, what is your recommendation?
I'm going to be greedy, and I'm going to recommend three damn things.
Why?
Because I can. Because
he's my boss.
I'm going to recommend the JLA Wedding Special because, oh my God, it is such a good book. And it just lets you know that, yes, a book can begin with a number one issue at issue 13, and I'll just say that. Also, what else was good? Wonder Girl number one. It was just a really nice read, and it's a little continuity heavy, but it was just a fun read, and I think Sanford Green is perfect for the character. And finally, I'm going to recommend the Showcase Presents Batman and the Outsiders Volume 1, because yes, I'm a child of the 80s, and 2, because of the tick skip. Halo. Is throw on the cover.
Halo, she lights the 1984 Olympic torch in that.
I Halo beginning.
I had that.
I Halo the Olympics.
Replacing Sam the Eagle.
16 Days of Glory, featuring Halo.
And I'm going to recommend Stormwatch PhD number 11. It's just great. It's a great comic. If you like superhero comics, it's the comic for you. If you like, you know, cop comics, it's the comic for you. It has a little bit of everything except for zombies. So if you like zombie comics, it's not the comic for you. But otherwise, it sounded better in my head. I'd hate to be like, there's something for everyone, and have some zombie fan be like, there were no zombies in this.
They got enough.
I hate that Ben Hatton. But it's really, really good. I mean, you don't even deserve to be reading it. You just have to be reading it. So, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. You read this comic.
With a linoleum knife.
That's right. And
the knife Marvin right. chased me with last week.
All right. Great. Next up, the lightning round.
Wow.
Like a thorn in my paw, here comes the lightning round, where we answer questions sent in by listeners like you. First question comes in from Christopher, and he asks, what will you do with your comics and comics-related stuff when you die? And we're going to ask Devon.
Go to hell. I got no plans on leaving anytime soon, so you ain't getting nothing. Anyway, what would I do? I would, I don't know. I don't want to think about it. Next.
Carrie?
Can I just leave it on the list of all my other deaths that I'm going to that or build a little fortress? You can't get to my grave. I got 4,000 copies of Punisher Wars.
Mike B?
I'm going to hope my issues of Death of Superman can pay for keeping me on life support.
You'll live forever!
Brooks?
Oh, man, what would come out of the grave and drag him down? After I'm dead, if I was able to do it, take out my Marvel Legends!
Deadpool! You're coming to hell with me,
I'm going to build a stairway to heaven.
I'm going to set myself on fire with them. Like a Viking funeral with comics. I'm going to load them into a boat.
Oh, oh my God. Poison the local ecosystem by burning ink.
Oh my God.
My ashes will mix with that of Spawn number one as I float off to four color heaven.
And the midget hits the roof.
All right. Next question. Which character from Marvel DC needs to be reimagined? New person, new powers, new motivation. And we're going to start with Mike P, because he's making a face.
Dang on. Which, I mean, honestly, in keeping with what we've been talking about, I'm going to go ahead and say Spider-Man. I mean, God. I mean, talk about a concept that's just, you know, clunking along and it's just like it's going along like a pinto that won't explode. It's just it won't go. It's like J. Michael Straczynski is just, you know, puttering along, pumping the gas, popping the clutch, and it's just not happening. I mean,
that's the metaphor.
I mean, talk about a reboot. You know, we need a reboot bad.
Carrie?
Geo-Force. You need to replace Geo-Force with somebody likable whose powers kind of make sense. I don't know. I don't think reimagining. Yeah, Geoforce. He'll do. Anyone who flies by shooting beams out of his hands needs to be reimagined.
That's how damage jumps.
Yeah, I know. That's how Jack of Hearts used to fly, too. And he needs to be reimagined. So
let's put them all in the Justice League.
Yeah, let's have a Justice League of dudes who can't fly and carry stuff simultaneously. It'll be aces.
Their hero clicks really suck.
Yeah. They need all the little compartments that Liefeld drew on them in the 90s to carry their keys and such.
Giant shoulder pads.
Okay, Swamp Thing. Bring him back to the DC universe. Stop trying to do Alan Moore. Alan Moore did it 20 years ago. It's not going to work again. You know, bring on your Josh Dysarts, and you know, as much as I love Will Pfeiffer, it's just like, you know what? Stop doing this like mystic nonsense riff with him. It's very Vertigo, but Swamp Thing has kind of moved past Vertigo.
So you're looking at me because you
can meet Brooks.
Me. Because you're the last one. That's why.
Yeah, that's pretty much. And I'm going to say Green Arrow needs to be replaced. Oh, I'm bet. They already did it. So I guess my goal is like empty.
Oh, snap.
I'm a crazy quilt reimagined. You know, like, I want them to pull a doctor.
Go crazy. I want his lights.
I just want him to like just start beating kids.
I want him to. I want him to pull like a Dr. Light with him. He's like, wait, Zatanna wiped my mind. I was there too. Like,
I'm a rapist too.
Brad Meltzer writes Crazy Quilt in Final Crisis.
Hitting women with shovels.
No more stupid costume.
Bright, colorful shovel.
Yeah, and the bright red shovel.
But he's still got to be blind.
Colorblind.
All right, Dr. Polaris asks, what are your feelings on replacing venerable, established characters with new, flashy...
It flies in the face of our own family. The question we just answered is about that.
Yeah.
Ask again.
What are your feelings on replacing venerable? Did I mispronounce it?
No.
I have a list.
This sounds funny. That's
they have veneer.
Venerable.
It sounds like venereal.
Yeah. That's veneer. Respect.
All right, here we go. What are your feelings on replacing established characters with new flashy versions with similar powers?
Sounds like the 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I don't really, I mean, it's not like, you know.
Like Red Arrow replaces Green Arrow.
Like, you know, it's more in the spirit of like, you know, Uncle Sam being replaced by the Patriot in like, you know, the 90s Captain America armor. It's just, it's stupid. You know, I don't really feel any way about it as long as it keeps the characters out there, you know. It's like, you know what, here's the deal. Okay. I'll get right down to it. Marv Wolfman is going to be doing the new Vigilante series in 2008. Who gives a damn? Bring back the Singing Cowboy. I'll read that damn comic. That's what it comes down to.
If it's good, let it ride. I don't know. Some of it works. Blue Beetle worked. Starman worked. Flash worked. A couple times. But, like... it's just the nature of the beast at this point. Instead of going like Spider-Man's wife has to be dead or he's going to be an old man or something, DC just replaces him with another guy in the same outfit. I mean,
being like, now that you're crippled, I'm going to be a woman in a cat suit.
Yeah. Wildcat sprained his knee.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, Mike.
I mean, not to sound like a broken record, but I mean exactly what Devon and John said. I mean, if you're gonna swing for the fences, you know, Shiza or get off the crapper. Like, you've absolutely, if you're gonna do something like that, you got to make it stick. Like, you got to have a character that's gonna like live in the hearts and minds of fans. Like, Kyle Rayner lives in the hearts and minds of fans. You may like him, you may not, but he's an institution and has been presented as such. And if you're going to do it, do Kyle Rayner. Don't do Connor Hawke so that he gets lost in this ridiculous limbo and now we have to just deal with him.
Whoa.
I always follow like someone's elaborate speech. And I don't have one planned. I mean, when it's good, it's good. When it's bad. I mean, just some things you can accept and some things you complain about on your blog.
I know I do.
Who likes author Joseph Curry, really?
Screw that guy.
I wish he would go back to punching aircraft carriers.
With full of Nazis.
Like the golden age.
Get a haircut, Sonny.
Right over here, my lawn.
And on that note, that we've, you know, made fun of Skip in the back.
Behind and in front of
him. That's right.
Nice tie, Skip.
That's all we got for this week's show. Thanks, Mike, for filling in. If you have any questions, comments, dramatic readings, feel free to send them to those Wednesdays. Ben at BigMonkeyComics.com, which actually forwards to thosewednesdays@gmail.com, but either one will do. Or if you have a theme song. I took last week off from asking about it. I was waiting. I got a neighbor with a guitar. That'll be really soon if you don't send me in something.
I've got two spoons and ribbon, folks.
I got a washboard and me. And that's what it's going to be.
I do ill beatbox.
Brooks has got a big tub and you can
fall in. Womp, big monkey. That's what it's going to be next
Country
week.
Country Bears, dude. We're going to get walking. He doesn't read scripts anymore.
Thank you, and have a good evening.